THEL Adder of THEGODs 427. These sacred mountains, hovering places of the Most High, are the sanctified pyramids. These pyramids, in turn, are rationalized natures, the chief accomplishment of the Master Builders. They are altars set up in the wilderness to signify that integrity has been established in a sphere to which integrity was once foreign. An ancient fable, in describing the stature of one whom God has thus anointed and lifted up into the assemblage of the illumined, declares that his face shone like the sun, and all the brightness of the stars was in his eyes. The flow of his hair was like the rippling waves of great rivers. And even his breath was as the soft breeze of spring sighing among the trees. Though his body was that of a man, his inner nature was as vast as the world, and his integrity rose like a mighty mountain whose summit is forever hidden by the clouds of meditation. The laughter of this perfected one sounded like the song of the waterfall, yet his sorrow was like the cool of evening among the shelter of the trees. All the beauties of the universe were invoked to define his virtues, and the immensities of space belittled his greatness. It follows that when such an illumined nature heaps together the stones of its accomplishment and forms therefrom the altar of its God a high and holy place suitable for the reception of the Eternal, the rational soul, invoked by these accomplishments, lends its power to the convocation of perfected faculties. Then, like the awful Hierophant of revelation, the rational self stands in splendid majesty in the midst of the flaming candles. Thus all natures are symbolic ladders, for by ascending the concatenated orders of his own intelligence man comes prox immate to his own rational and enduring part. The allegory of Jack and the Beanstalk, which like so many other children's fables has its origin in primitive folklore, well describes the mystery of the ladder. The beanstalk, which in a single night grew up to heaven, reminds one of the fabled mango tree of the elusive Hindu Mahatma, or the rope thrown into the air, which does not fall. The miraculous growth of the magician's plant signifies the culturing of the soul. Every philosopher is a magician, for by the aid of his unfolded intellect he accomplishes. 428 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY plushes that which to the ignorant appears impossible. The rope suspended from nothing, up to which the naked Hindu boy scampers out of sight, teaches a valuable lesson to such as will inquire into its meaning. The question is often asked by the incredulous, but how can the rope stay there with nothing to hold it? The magician may answer, it is well supported, only you do not see the support. The unenlightened and behold the accomplishments of the wise, but the methods by which such ends are attained are incomprehensible. The great truths of life are, like the magician's rope, held in their proper place by an unseen agent. Those unable to pierce the magician's subterfuge have eyes but see not. The millions to whom the concerns of the spirit are of no importance, who, though continually surrounded by manifestations of universal intelligence, are still oblivious to the whole pageantry, these are the truly blind, and their affliction is most grievous. In the allegory of the beanstalk, Jack is the initiate climbing upward toward perfection. The beanstalk has two significances. First, it is the secret doctrine which may grow up to its fullness in a single night, if that night be regarded as the duration of a soul in the mortal state. The beanstalk is further symbolic of the soul itself, up which consciousness must climb to discover the divine sphere from which it was exiled. It is noteworthy that when Jack reaches the upper world, where one would naturally expect beauty and tranquillity to reign, he finds instead that his newly discovered sphere is the dwelling place of a fierce ogre who has the distressing proclivity of using strangers to supply the requirements of his menu. This giant is the ancient Demiurgus, the lord of the world, the royal autocrat, the vast tyrant who opposes all who would climb out of their materiality. He is selfishness, egotism, lust, and hate. He is the epitome of all physical attachment, and the appetites by which man is inclined toward the corporeal state. He is the giant of form, the hero of little minds, the fetish of the materialist, the god of those who worship through the senses alone, the supreme genius of the physical minded, the magnificence to which fools bow. The ladder of THEGODs 429. Down. Those who would escape the clutches of this giant must be wise indeed, for they must outwit themselves. In the ancient writings it is said that all will fail except a fortuitous destiny move with them, for skill will not suffice, prayers will be unavailing, and only the graciousness of the gods can ensure success. The subject of providence, or fortuitous destiny, is worthy of amplification at this point. One of the symbolic aphorisms of Pythagoras enjoined the disciple to abstain from the eating of beans. In its literal sense, there is seemingly no reason whatsoever for the admonition. Among the Greeks, however, beans were used in gambling and various games of chance, and the esoteric purpose of the admonition was to discharge man's reliance upon auspicious fortune, for he who consigns himself to the vagaries of chance in reality rests his fate upon his own integrity. This point is well made by Mephistopheles in Goethe's Faust. How closely linked are luck and merit! Doth never to these fools occur? Had they the philosopher's stone, I swear it, the stone would lack the philosopher. Man eternally struggles against the littleness that is himself, seeking to increase thereby the virtue of his own destiny. By such effort he frequently is able to maintain a higher footing than would otherwise be his natural right, for effort shall not be left unrewarded. If, however, man ceases his struggle and, doing nothing, trusts to providence for an auspicious throw, that which is his own will know his face, and his reward shall be according to the insufficiency of himself. He who trusts himself to himself is brave indeed. Luck is not what it seems, for it connives with law to bring about the undoing of the foolish. The bit and bridle which Nemesis carries she slips over the head of the unwary. With blinders she takes away his vision, with chakrine lifts his head so high that he can no longer see the road, and then with loose rein drives him to destruction. But if the gods throw dice they cannot lose, for 430 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY. By reason of their very nature they are predestined to be the victors in every contest. Being as yet imperfect, however, man may never relax his vigilance or cease his struggle lest the imperfections which he seeks to outdistance overtake and humiliate him. What, then, is providence? It is like flowing into like a quality reproducing its kind. Providence is not what we desire but what we actually are, and when we open the flood gates of fortune we shall simply be inundated by the torrents of similars drowned in the substances of ourselves. By confronting destiny with effort we aspire to reach the ideal state of the higher self, but by appealing to fortune we place ourselves in the keeping of an impersonal fate that tortures us with our every defect, and decrees us to abide by the measure of our smallest virtue. Thus only in the truly great is the appeal to fortune to be relied upon, for the rest the law of labor is the only certain way. When it is written that man can subsist only when the gods are auspicious, it merely signifies that accomplishment depends upon the perfect mastery of self and the development of all parts, so that the flow of destiny brings to the disciple a propitious end to enterprise. Good fortune is not good to the foolish, nor is evil fortune evil to the wise. The foolish are incapable of benefiting from that which may in its own nature be good. Conversely, the wise are incapable of being injured by evil, for understanding renders all things usable. Thus the identical so-called evil serves the philosopher while it undoes the thoughtless. The theory of evolution as expounded by the ancient sages does not agree with the Darwinian concept that life moves from one form or kind to another, but rather that life continually moves through the various states of itself. For example, plants do not move toward the perfection of man, nor does man incline toward the perfection of demons. Each of these orders is complete in itself, moving inevitably toward its own perfection in the perfect unfoldment of its own intrinsic characteristics. Growth, then, is that eternal procession of qualities marching to unity with themselves. Man, the personality. THEL adder of THEGODs 431. Approaches man, the idea, and achieves perfection by unity with his own paradigm. Man reaches completion when he perfectly fills the mold or pattern that exists in the transcendental spheres. Evolution, then, is the fitting of a nature into its own archetype, and its end is attained when no longer any point of difference remains between the object as a transitory body and the object as a permanent idea. By growth we learn to become our essential selves, ordered after the precise image of our own divine prototype. That growth should be the process whereby man becomes reconciled to his own transcendental being may seem a strange thought, but to those who ponder the mystery, this truth becomes evident. Our path is rendered plain, we are destined by eternal providence to become the fullness of ourselves. Inclining to neither side nor departing from our persons, we shall find perfection in the consummation of the destiny for which we were first conceived. The imitator must fail, because departing from self he would assume the virtues of another rather than his own. Each individual is allotted an end peculiar to himself, and through uncounted millenniums moves inevitably toward that archetypal ideal patterned for him prior to his departure from universal self in quest of individuality. All creatures of a similar kind share a common origin and destiny. It is the peculiar purpose of men that they should become man, and united in one nature constitute a complete being, that glorious assemblage of parts possessing three virtues, of which the first is completeness and the other two are the poles of this completeness, namely, rationality and permanence.